What's up, everyone? Welcome to an all-new edition of the Sports Report Podcast with Brad and Clay. Coming up on today's show, talk about the NBA playoffs to this point, get you caught up on what's going on in the East and West semifinals. Also, the swirling news of NBA coaching frenzy, jobs open, some new coaches heading to different places, and some coaches heading to familiar places in La La Land. And we'll recap the NFL draft as well, getting you caught up on where some maybe your favorite teams or players ended up in this year's spectacular show. Welcome my co-host into the show, Clay Schrader. How we doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm feeling it, man. This is a brand new Sports Report podcast. We got new logos out there and just a whole different feel to the show now.
Oh, yeah. Been a while. Didn't have a show last week.
So. Yeah, we're back. I mean, after a week hiatus, we're back.
We are.
So much has changed. I feel a lot older now that we've been gone this long.
I'm about to be another year older, so...
That's right. Got a big birthday coming up tomorrow. That's one reason why we're doing a show here today on Monday and not Tuesday. Got a big 2-5 coming up.
Gosh. I'm getting old.
I mean, are you like me? I know I'm not quite there yet like you are. I'm not to that point yet, but are you almost like when you get up in the morning, do you kind of have like, you know, your back kind of sort of aches a little bit, your knees pop a little?
No, I don't have a problem getting up, but I like to go to bed pretty early, I'll say that.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you have one old man quality, what do you think it is?
Well, that's definitely going to bed. I started getting tired about 8:30, 8:45.
That's not too bad. Not too bad.
Too terrible.
I think it's, for me, it's loud noises that really drive me crazy. Like, you know what? Hey, I'm trying to just, you know, do my own thing, and I can't concentrate on my own thing because you're out there being too loud. Simmer down, kids. All these little motorcycles and four-wheelers zipping around the neighborhood. I'm trying to get some sleep.
Right.
So that's definitely my old man quality, is just the perpetual, you know, angeredness of myself at crazy sounds and loud sounds and these young kids these days.
Yeah. I'm with you on the loud vehicles, motorcycles, jacked up redneck trucks.
There's no need for that.
Especially the ones that blow like a mountain of smoke in your face. It's like, you know, this has got to be bad for the environment. I mean, I'm not a hippie or nothing, but
just if I wanted to be, it'd fit me more.
Good thing I'm not, or I'd be freaking out.
Exactly, but having signs up everywhere. I do, that's another thing about me, is I hate these jack-up trucks that you see all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost
especially down here in the South.
Oh, yeah. And there's always like some kind of, you know, rebel flag or, you know, something flying behind it.
Salt life, although we're hundreds of miles from the nearest ocean.
Right. Where are people getting? I mean, I guess they're going to the beach, getting these salt life stickers and showing them off when they get back home.
Either that, or order them on Amazon, or no telling.
That's just ridiculous. I mean, how cool? I mean, how far do you have to go out of your way to try to be cool?
People try really hard.
Apparently,
it's pretty sad.
My question is, you know, how are you gonna fit through a drive-thru when you got your truck jacked up on, you know, 25 feet tall?
I know your antenna smacks the thing that hangs down. You know.
Yep.
Whatever.
That thing is, you know, here in town we have this really cool parking garage outside the theater and the big wall climbing place downtown.
Yeah, right.
And we were actually down there the other day, and there's this truck who almost got stuck because it literally was that tall. It was almost got stuck inside the parking garage.
Parking garage, that's a little ridiculous.
I mean, I feel nervous about fitting my little Ford Focus in the parking garage. Can you imagine these guys?
Yeah, some of them went too high. Yeah, I feel you on that. I wouldn't drive a big jacked-up truck in there. I'd be afraid it'd scratch my roof up.
That's just one of the many reasons not to drive a jacked-up truck.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, so we have a lot going on in the world of sports. Mainly, the NBA playoffs are in full force. We've seen a few teams already be sent home for the rest of the year. They have to figure out what they're going to do this offseason and how the moves they make in the offseason will impact their seasons going forward. Some teams have decided to remove coaches. Some teams will decide to release or trade players at the deadline. And at the free agency starts July 1, this year. But let's go ahead and get caught up on what we saw last night, Clay. When and I'm going to go to the last game we saw, which was the San Antonio Spurs going to Oklahoma City to take on the Thunder in Game 4. And Kevin Durant showed up. He had 41 points,
yeah,
which tied his playoff career high. He had 17 in the fourth quarter alone, which was probably his best quarter, single quarter of his career. He was 6-6 from field goal range. And he actually outscored the Spurs by himself. I believe it was actually 17 points, 17-16 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, he elevated his superstar status last night, that's for sure. That was very impressive. It's been a good series. Was it now 2-2?
2-2.
Yeah, that's probably been the best series so far in the semifinals. The Toronto and Heat series is pretty good as well, but these two teams are very evenly matched. I mean, and we knew, you know, for weeks and it seemed like months, you know, we knew this would be the second round matchup. You know what I mean? And it's definitely living up to its potential for sure.
Yeah, I mean, going back a few years ago when the Thunder had James Harden, Reggie Jackson coming off the bench, even Kendrick Perkins starting all five games in the finals, yeah, that year. Going back a few years ago, this was a different-looking Thunder team who really seemed to have the Spurs number in the playoffs at that point and were looking to dominate the league for the next 10 years. Injuries have kind of held that up. The resurgence of a team out west called the Golden State Warriors have stopped that from happening. Now they're possibly going on their own major tear of the NBA in the next couple of seasons. But, you know, we all knew this was going to happen, that these two teams were possibly going to meet in the playoffs. They have not disappointed at all. It's been, you know, swapping games, 1, 2, 3, 4 is going to the other team. You think that Thunder may have stole home court advantage after winning game 2, but then the Spurs come right back and win game 3 and take it right back. And now we're tied up at 2 games apiece heading back to San Antonio. And for me, it is the best series to watch so far in the playoffs. I know this is going to be maybe secondary to whoever gets out of this round and they take on possibly the Golden State Warriors. That's probably going to be the best overall series. But, you know, right now, I'm enjoying what we're watching. We're seeing two teams who have, you know, a future that's kind of questionable for both because we're not sure what's going to happen with, you know, majority of their roster after this season. Kevin Durant is a free agent this year. He could leave and possibly go to San Antonio, which was one possibility floated out there at the end of last week. Could you imagine Kawhi Leonard, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Kevin Durant on the same team?
Wow.
I actually like that. I like that better than him going to Golden State.
Yeah, I kind of do too.
That seems more of a threat because you have, you know, we've seen how hot LaMarcus Aldridge has been in this series. I mean, he hasn't missed. He goes off for almost 30, 40 points the other night. In game 1 and 2, and it's just a guy you can't stop. Serge Ibaka has been one of the most, you know, just toughest guys in the NBA when it comes to defending, winning, you know, getting blocks. His nickname is Ibalaka. He gets blocks here and there. He's one of the toughest guys to go up against in the post. And LaMarcus Aldridge is making him look silly in secondary because he's just going all these moves, and his footwork has been really impressive this series. And he's been wearing out Serge Ibaka. Actually, the best guy on him in the playoffs has probably been Steven Adams. It's just a fun series to watch. Go ahead. Yeah.
A little bit bigger body on Adams, I guess, but kind of help. But you think Ibaka could match up really well with Aldridge.
I know. He's the best athlete they have in the post. Besides, if you throw Kevin Durant down there, but LaMarcus would just back him down until he got to the goal.
Right.
but, yeah, I mean, we're seeing the Thunder. It's kind of a crazy series with the blowout in game 1 that was really disappointing. The Spurs come out strong and they lead at one point by 40 points and they get out of there with a major win. And after that, we've seen this series take more of what we thought it would be, which was just back and forth throughout the game, throwing punches by both teams. Russell Westbrook has played well. He took too many shots in game 3. He admitted that, and he's tried to correct that in game 4. You could really see it in the way he was passing the ball, moving it around the floor. He was trying to get his teammates more involved, and he did that. And
yeah, he definitely was a facilitator last night with
the team. Definitely. Yeah, so we saw the Thunder really start taking control here. Russell Westbrook finished with 14 points, 15 assists, and he really became the facilitator, like he said. And now, you know, whenever you have Kevin Durant go off and get 17 points in one quarter alone and hit all of his shots and go off for 41, you're going to have a good chance of winning the game.
Yeah, you got like your chances when Durant takes over like that, for sure.
So now we're going back to San Antonio for game five, and you got to think, San Antonio, they've had, we're not really accustomed. When you think of the Spurs, you think of just this perfect machine where they run on offense, they're moving the ball around, and on defense, they're always there, they're not going to break. We've seen them actually make a few mistakes in this series where, I believe it was in game two, maybe game three, where they really started off really cold from the field. They were like 5 out of the first 17 shots, missing easy layups around. And then we saw last night in game four where their defense wasn't too accustomed like we're normally, accustomed to seeing them happening.
Yeah, San Antonio definitely got off to a hot start last night. Oklahoma City was pretty cold. It was 27-17 at the end of the first. I thought San Antonio was going to lose, but, Oklahoma City kept battling back and got back in the game and just totally took, Durant totally took over in the fourth quarter, like you mentioned. San Antonio really struggled down the stretch.
So game five is tomorrow, your birthday. I don't know if you're going to be locked in to the game tomorrow night at around 8 o'clock Eastern.
Check it out if I have time.
Depends on where the spot is and where you're hanging out at. If there's a TV there.
Surely there will be.
So Kevin Durant's been hot. He has a really big game. Now, that was at one point, Clay, when the Spurs were up by double digits in the first half. That could have been, in some way, maybe the last home game for Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City. And then he comes right back and leads the charge. They win the game, and now they're at least guaranteed one more game in Oklahoma City. If he, if they don't prevail out of the series, and if he doesn't sign back, there's at least one more game.
Possibly, I think they'll get a deal done. I just can't see him leaving. But yeah, it's possible. At least he went out, in terrific fashion. If it is his last game, but I think it'll be another game in Oklahoma City in this series.
Definitely. Sorry. Definitely. Game six will be
next
Thursday or Friday, and they'll have at least one game back. Hopefully, for me, and I think you're just like me where we kind of hope that KD stays in Oklahoma City.
I just can't see anywhere else. Excuse me.
It's okay. It would be just, playing the game where you would picture Kevin Durant in another uniform. It's interesting. We've seen him over the course of this season. All this, all the media put him in the Boston Celtics uniform. They put him in a Spurs uniform, a Warriors uniform. It looks, it looks different. It looks kind of strange, to be honest.
It does. It looks pretty good in one of those Atlanta Hawks uniforms, in my opinion.
Hey, you know what? I was actually listening to a podcast the other day, and it was floated around that, one guy said, I tell you, the best place for Kevin Durant to go would be the Atlanta Hawks, because, for one, you have the Spurs system in the Eastern Conference with Coach Bud. You're in the Eastern Conference, which means you don't have to go up against the Warriors all the time. You don't have to go against Clippers and San Antonio all the time. At most, you have to go against LeBron James 3 or 4 times out of the year. But if you got the Spurs system, you got Kevin Durant, you got the core pieces of the Hawks still there. Maybe that's just what they're missing is one big star to put them on the next level. We'll get to the Hawks here in just a minute. But that's kind of an interesting thought if you had Kevin Durant in a Hawk uniform.
I don't think it'll happen. But hey, who knows, with the new ownership, I think they're going to try and make some moves.
Let's go ahead and get to them here. They were swept yet again, 2 years in a row, by the Cleveland Cavaliers. We saw, the first game, they had no shot. They got smacked in the face from the beginning, and it really was over from there. Now, the next and last three games, where Atlanta had the lead, they had opportunities, and especially in game three, that was a really pivotal game, their first game at home in the series. They're up by 9, I think, in the fourth quarter, and then we saw Cleveland go on a huge run to end the game 22-5 and end up winning that ball game. And then from there, last night was a must-win game. Atlanta was in the same spot before, where they had opportunities, and it just wasn't enough. And whenever the Cavaliers are shooting this hot from three-point land, it's hard to even get one win in a series.
Yeah. I was very impressed with Cleveland's three-point shooting, that's for sure. And that, you know, the whole time I was thinking about watching Cleveland, you know, be so hot from three. You know, J.R. Smith went crazy. Even LeBron, you know, he didn't hit too many threes in the last game, but that was it, that game two where they were just ridiculous. I think it was game two.
Yeah.
Game one was a good game. Every other game in the series was a really good competitive game, except for game two. Nobody would beat Cleveland in game two.
Maybe I'm thinking of game two where it was a smack in the face. Game one was actually pretty close. Game two is when they hit 25 three-pointers and it was over by halftime.
Yeah, they would have beat the 96 Bulls, you know, with MJ.
Yeah.
They'd beat anybody the way they were shooting the ball. But yeah, J.R. Smith, when he gets hot, man, he's hot. Love and I love him. Love had a big hit. It's like one of his best games of the year in game four, which, you know, that's encouraging for Cleveland, you know, to get him more involved. And LeBron, I think they're better when LeBron kind of doesn't try to do everything, you know what I mean? Because he's not the player he used to be. I always thought he was, a little overrated myself, but I think he's a little bit better when he tries to be more of a facilitator because he is a good passer. You know, it has been a really good passer. I'll give him credit for that. But I think, you know, when he just tries more of the leader, try to facilitate, you know, let Irvin, let, you know, J.R. Smith, let Love, some of the other guys make some plays, and then, you know, he pitch in and get, you know, 20, 25 points, you know. Instead of trying to do everything, I think the team runs much better when he's, you know, just more of the leader and the facilitator of that offense. But that's just my opinion.
You know, in the playoffs, this has been the most I've actually got to sit down and watch the Cavaliers. And I was really impressed by the Pistons in the first series.
Yeah.
In the first round. And I was hoping they would at least pick up a game just for their confidence of a young team like that to pick up one game against, you know, LeBron and the Cavaliers. And their first, from, you know, most of the players, their first ever playoff series. So I was hoping for them to get one game. They didn't. And you would think the Hawks, you know, learning from last year's mistakes, would get, you know, a game or two in this series. They didn't do that. But watching the Cavaliers, it's evident what they're doing with this particular team here in the playoffs. I don't know. I haven't really got a chance to lock into every game they played this year. But watching them in the playoffs the last eight games, what I've seen is LeBron James kind of get out of the way. Kyrie Irving has really controlled the ball. For the majority of the clock, he'll sit there. He's shooting, it lights out. He got mad handles. Whenever he crosses you and he gets space, it's automatically a bucket right there in your face. When LeBron is most effective is whenever he has the ball in his hands, he's coming off a pick and roll, and then he draws that second defender, and that's when they beat you because he can just throw it to the other side of the floor, and there's a wide open three in the corner for, you know, Love or Irvin or J.R. Smith or anybody. So
yeah.
That's really what they've kind of played to their strength in this series and the last series before, is really having LeBron as more of a decoy than anything. He can still drive past you, get to the bucket, and make layups or dunks or even hit fadeaway jumpers here and there and draw fouls, of course. But really the best thing he can do is draw that second defender, draw that double team, kick it. And I don't know what these guys are doing, but I watched that game. I want to say game three. And well, even game four too, because Kevin Love was on fire. Okay, he missed it last night. He missed his first two or three threes, then he hit five in a row. And the last three or four that he hit there, it was on those double teams, like a screen, and the Hawks would double LeBron James, who hadn't shot in two quarters, and they would leave Kevin Love, who would just trigger down to the corner and hit three after three, and there's nobody on him. When you do that, I mean, that's. There's no wonder why your team gets down when they have opportunities time and time again. Every time Atlanta would cause a turnover, they'd run down the floor and miss a layup or turn it right back over. And on the other end, they would, you know, their rotations wouldn't where they're supposed to be, and they leave a guy wide open for three.
Yeah.
So that has been interesting to watch the Cavaliers and LeBron James kind of, you know, play second fiddle to Kyrie Irving or even Kevin Love in this series, which. You know, I think we have just seen the best series by Kevin Love in his NBA postseason career. Again, didn't get to the playoffs till he got to Cleveland. Last year was a mess. He got hurt in the second round. Didn't help him at all after that because I believe, was it a dislocated arm or shoulder or something? And then this year they've added him back into the offense a lot more and drawing off those pick and rolls, he's wide open for threes every time off those screens.
Yeah, and he's definitely, you know, when LeBron was in Cleveland, in Miami, you know, that Bosch kind of became an outside three-point shooter, and he was decent at it. But yeah, I just think Kevin Love is a much better fit in the, you know, the offense, you know, compared to Chris Bosh, because, you know, they kind of, I don't know if it's just a LeBron factor, but, you know, it kind of, whoever plays the four, you know, with LeBron kind of turns into a jump shooter. And, you know, and Kevin Love is definitely a better shooter than Chris Bosh is.
So now that the Atlanta Hawks have been swept twice, 2 years in a row, by the Cavaliers, they haven't beat the Cavaliers in postseason at all. They're 0-12 in the history of both franchises. What do you think? Is it time for a shakeup? Do we need to, you know, maybe let Al Horford go, or do we sign him back to a max deal? Remember, he'll be 35 when the deal is over. And what do you do with Jeff Teague?
I think Jeff Teague is probably gone. If you read anything into his Instagram photos, he posted a peace sign. So I think that means he's probably gone. Didn't get to play much in the last game. I think, as you said, the franchise is leaning towards Dennis Schroeder. I guess he fits Bud's offense. I mean, they drafted him, you know, as Bud's first offseason. So I think he fits that offense more. But I don't know about a complete blow-up. I mean, heck, this team was the best team in the East last year in the regular season, and they still had a really good year this year. I don't, you know, I think they should maybe retool, but to completely blow it up, I think that's going a little bit too far.
Well, I do think that in some weird way, Dennis Schroeder is, but you know, Coach Budenholzer's Tony Parker.
Tony Parker, yeah.
It has to be, for this to work, he has to be from overseas. He is from Germany. And he has to have all these, you know, different kinds of talents, but he's a little bit different than Tony Parker. Tony Parker had never had this kind of speed or athleticism. And sometimes that can be the default of Schroeder's, because he can try to use his athleticism or his speed and then gets too caught up with the dribble and loses the handle, or, you know, jumps in the air, doesn't know where he's going to go with the ball, and just, you know, simple fundamentals, really, that you would think, you know, Tony Parker would never do, you know, never fail on those fundamentals. But it's clear watching the game, you know, last night's game, Jeff Teague did not play a single second in the fourth quarter. They clearly went with Dennis Schroeder to close out the game and try to keep their season alive. Whenever it was all on the line, they chose one person, they chose him. And to his credit, he did do some things that were, you know, really impressive. He got some really nice shots at the basket, and he did knock down a three here or there. As you know, as a really underrated passer, that's one thing that he should probably play more to his strength, is passing the ball a little bit better. You know, a lot of people compared him to Rajon Rondo, but what does Rondo do? He doesn't shoot a ton of shots every game. He gets, you know, 12, 13, 15 assists every game. So maybe that's something that Dennis needs to work on in the offseason, is kind of maybe changing the way he plays a little bit. Because I think in his mind, he sees Russell Westbrook and tries to be that, you know, instead of trying to be the conventional point guard where, you know, like a Chris Paul or Tony Parker or, you know, players like that, even Rajon Rondo, the way he, you know, runs the offense. I think sometimes he gets caught up in trying to score, you know, be a playmaker too much and score. And that's where they kind of fall apart a little bit on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm just skimming through a little bit of an article debating whether they should blow it up or retool. And it doesn't sound, the retooling prospect doesn't sound too amazing when you actually read, because, you know, they're not going to have, if they re-sign Al Horford, you know, they're going to have to either re-sign Al Horford or Kent Bazemore. And Bazemore, you know, really improved his, you know, stock, if you want to say, this season with some really good play. So he's going to be demanding a pretty good contract. And they have his early bird rights, which means that they can re-sign him to, they can go over the cap to sign him if he agrees, you know, but by twice of what his contract was this year, which would only be $6 million. He'll only make $3 million. And I think he's going to definitely demand more than $6 million a year.
Definitely.
So it's going to be hard. You know, it's going to be hard to keep Bazemore and Horford. So, you know, I don't – you know, if you let Horford walk, re-sign Bazemore, and maybe try to replace Horford, or do you let Bazemore walk and try and sign, you know, but you're not going to be able to afford, you know, a superstar, you know. So I don't – it's a real dilemma. It really is. I don't see them – they're either going to have to, you know, blow it up and go through a couple really bad years, you know what I mean, or just, you know, try and do a little bit better and kind of be about where they're at right now, you know.
That's the thing. When you look at trying to be better – And
they could free up some money if they could trade Teague for, you know, what can they get for Teague for? I mean, he's only got 1 year left on his deal. I mean, could they get a first round pick for that?
No.
For Teague? You don't think so?
No. Expiring contracts was at one time in the NBA not too long ago, the most attractive offer in a trade. Because
right.
It comes off your books, and now, you know, you don't have to worry about that contract. However, now with the new salary cap going up so high the next two seasons, that's not really that attractive anymore.
I see.
But, you know, you talk about the Hawks and trying to just be better and keep the core together. I feel like that's what we've done for the last, you know, for the majority of the last 8 years is keep everybody together and just give it one more go. You know, we got this, guys. Let's just knuckle down on defense a little bit better. Let's shoot, you know, more efficient from downtown. Let's set harder screens. That's not working, okay? You have got to decide at some point in the front office that it's time for something. It's time for at least some sort of shakeup. I get, you know, head coaching shakeups. That's more common than anything, because what is the first thing you do when you're not winning? You blame it on the coach. You fire him. You bring somebody else in. That usually brings in new management up front in the front office. So Atlanta Hawks now have new front office. They have
coach was under the old regime, by the way, you know, Danny Ferry, but I think the front office still has, you know, plenty of confidence in Coach Bud. You know,
I think so too.
Yeah, it'd be a huge mistake to get rid of him anytime.
So I don't think they'll get rid of Bud. I can see a scenario there where they let Al Horford go. There's a lot of teams interested. Orlando and Boston are two teams in particular who are missing one, you know, big post guy to really, you know, help their team get to the next level.
Yeah.
And if you're Atlanta, you know, one guy you can look at, if you're the front office and you want to make a splash, this could work. You could go out, you get Dwight Howard, you sign him to a 2-year deal that's not max money. Because
you want to come home to Atlanta, that's for sure.
And that's one thing, you know, Dwight Howard, he's so sensitive. For being a huge muscular guy, he's one of the most sensitive players in the league. And all he wants to do is be in an environment where he feels loved and admired, okay? Well, Los Angeles was not that with Kobe Bryant, because he's not going to admire anybody but himself. Okay, you go to Houston, James Harden is, you know, his own person, trying to do his own thing and be the guy, you know, be the face of that franchise, be the beard of that franchise if he could. And so that's not happening. They didn't gel there. They had, you know, off the court issues, on the court issues were more visible. And now, there's no way he's coming back to Houston. He could come to Atlanta. He would feel kind of loved because he's back home. He's back in the Eastern Conference, a little bit easier than the West. And it kind of plays to his strengths. It will remind people so much of the younger days in the old Orlando Magic team, because it's a big guy in the post, and he can kick out, you know, three, you know, to shooters out on the wing. You know, that's something you could do. You could drive and kick, or you can have Dwight Howard in the post, and he opened up shots out on the outside. I just worry about a couple things. You know, the Hack-a-Shaq thing. You have to worry about that now if you're Atlanta. And you have to worry about on defense now that all these teams, we're seeing the game change so rapidly. Your big guys are going to have to be able to step out and guard people at the three-point line, and that's not what Dwight Howard's all about.
Right. Horford can do that. at least a lot better. But, yeah, it would be interesting if they could, you know, if they let Horford go, sign Dwight for, you know, less, for, you know, still going to be, you know, 20, at least, what is the max, 23, 24 million or 25?
Yeah, about 25 million. So if you sign him for 2 years.
2 years, 40 would be nice. He might want a little more than that.
I don't think he's worth that, to be honest.
Well, no, he's not. Yeah, I agree with you. I know he's not. But he'll probably want at least 20 million a year.
I say 2 year, 36 to 40, somewhere around in there.
That'd be nice. You know, if
you're Atlanta, you're saying Dwight, show me. Okay, you're in this opportunity. You haven't had success the last few years. Prove to me that we owe you more money. Go out there and give us some wins.
Maybe let Teague go and maybe sign a cheap backup point guard or draft a backup point guard. You know, maybe they can re-sign Bazemore. Maybe they'll have money to re-sign Bazemore. I could say that, but would that lineup be better? Would a lineup of Schroeder, Korver, Bazemore, Millsap, and Horford be better than what they had this year?
Never know.
I mean, while Horford with Howard instead of Horford at the center, would that be better than what they had this year? You know what I mean? They're about the same, or maybe even worse. You know, it could be. If they could improve the bench, if they had a little bit of money to improve the bench, but they're going to have to use that money, you know, to either pay Bazemore or get another small forward, you know, somebody's got to start at the wing. So I would think they would use that money to just re-sign Ken Bazemore. Now, I would think Bazemore would want to stay in Atlanta, you know. And if they could get rid of Jeff Teague's contract somehow, you know, for a cheap, inexpensive player. Maybe trade him for somebody else in an expiring contract that has less money. Or, you know, there's a lot of options, but that would be the starting five probably. I just don't know if that starting five is better than what was on the court, you know, just yesterday. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, the bench is the problem, you know, and really because you look at Atlanta had four players in that starting lineup in the All-Star game a year ago.
Yeah.
So, and the bench is the problem. You don't have a ton of guys who can give you any points coming off the bench besides Schroeder. That's the main reason why he didn't start, is because you needed someone who can give you buckets coming off the bench. If you're Atlanta, you look around all these other teams, okay? What does every other team have that you don't, especially in the Eastern Conference? And that's big guys off the bench who can get you rebounds, who can get you points and hustle plays. You know, they don't really have that. They don't have, and especially whenever they go to their bench, they change what kind of team they are. They're not this spread it out, run and gun kind of team. They're more in the half court set, and they, you know, we don't see them really execute the way they're supposed to because of their bench play.
I'm afraid that they're going to let Horford go and start Tiago Splitter at center and just go the inexpensive route, you know what I mean?
I think the front office is going to make some kind of splash.
You think so?
Or at least in their minds, think it's a splash.
You got to remember, Splitter will be up next year. Well, he's a pretty good center off the bench, but he's not really a banger type, I guess is what you're referencing.
Well, I mean, to me, Tiago's one of those guys. Yeah, he's in the league. He's okay. He's not great, you know. Yeah. But really, one of your best players has been Chris Humphreys.
Yeah, he had a good game yesterday.
Knocking down threes, that's exactly. He was at one point, Clay, it was four Cavaliers in the paint, one Atlanta Hawk in the paint. That was Chris Humphreys, and he was getting down rebounds. He was forcing fouls. He was doing all these things that you need to do. And everyone else was just sitting outside the three-point line waiting to go back on defense.
Yeah, I think he could, if they, he's worth a look for sure. Maybe on a cheap one-year deal or something.
He could be your Boris Diaw.
Boris Diaw, yeah. I've heard that rumor. Maybe that they might consign Boris Diaw, but it doesn't really. I mean, how old is Boris now?
Well, I meant that Chris Humphreys could be your Boris Diaw on the Spurs offense.
Right, yeah. I'm just saying, I saw a rumor today where the Hawks might sign Diaw.
He'll be in San Antonio for life.
Yeah. But, yeah, he could be the Boris Diaw type for sure. I don't think Mike Scott, you would hope a guy like Mike Scott, you know, a younger guy, could kind of step up and take that role. But I don't know. There's a lot of options.
I think the Hawks will look a little bit different than this year. I think we will see some moves. The really interesting thing about this team is in the next 2 years, this offseason and next offseason, everybody's a free agent for the Hawks.
Yeah.
So they get to pick and choose who they're going to keep, who they're going to trade, who they're not going to re-sign. And the best part is, you know, in these 2 years, there's a lot of really good free agents out there. Kevin Durant, for one, you know, Hashawn Whiteside's out there, going to be a free agent this year, going to get max money somewhere if he don't sign back with Miami. So there's a lot of really great players going to be free agents in the next 2 years, and I think we'll see some money being spent in the big ATL.
Well, I hope the ownership is, you know, serious about it. I really do. I hope, because, you know, I don't know what the Braves are doing, and the Falcons always, you know, always keep $8 or $9 million, you know, in the bank and don't spend it, you know. So, it'd be interesting to see if an Atlanta team really takes winning a championship seriously. Because I feel like the other Atlanta teams, or I feel like all the Atlanta teams at this point, have really not taken winning a championship, you know, seriously in the last few years.
It'd be interesting to see what the Hawks do. I mean, they have to do something because they can't. I mean, I know they won 60 games last year. They're the number one seed in the East. But watching this team this year, it was clear they're not as good as they were last year. And in the playoffs, they just look like they're just participating in the game while the Cavaliers did whatever they want to. They flipped a switch. The Cavaliers would be down by 5 or 6, trading buckets with Atlanta. And in the fourth quarter, they'd flip a switch, and Atlanta would just step back and watch.
You're right. And you could just tell, even the announcers were saying, here it comes, and there's nothing you can do about it.
There's a couple things you can do. I mean, you can play harder on defense. You can not turn the ball over. You can rotate. You can make, you know, smarter decisions with the ball. But Atlanta just fell apart in the end there.
Yeah, unfortunately. They could have won a couple games in the series. Like, it could be 2-2, honestly, at this point. But
it really could be.
Yeah.
So, you know, the last series that's still out there is the Raptors and the Heat. And I told you earlier that I don't know what it is. I just can't get locked into this series. I've rarely watched any of this series, to be honest with you guys. I love the Raptors. I know Kyle Lowry's been struggling. He had a big game last game with 33 points. Finally got going again. Hashawn Whiteside's going to be out for the remainder of probably for the remainder of this series. And to join the big guy for the Raptors, Jonas Valanciunas, who's also out. He has a sprained ankle, Whiteside with, you know, possibly a sprained knee. So those big guys are out. Now it plays a whole different game because now Miami, who, you know, they don't have that anchor in the post to get rebounds, to force block shots, and to get easy buckets in the paint. Now they're going to play more outside and really, you know, I think we're going to start seeing more of Joe Johnson in this series with the Heat because they have to rely more on their shooting. And for the Raptors, it's just a matter of playing better defense and really hitting more of your shots because in the first two games, even though they got one of those two games, they really wasn't shooting that well. And we've seen DeMar DeRozan and Lowry really take a step back in the postseason.
Yeah, I agree. It's been an interesting start. You know, I think Miami won the first game. Did they win game two?
No, they won game one. Raptors won game two. And Raptors won game three.
Yeah. So, yeah, they haven't kind of stepped up. Yeah. I was really surprised when Miami won the first game. But it's been a very competitive series, that's for sure. It's been three good games. Must win tomorrow for Miami, a game that they can win. Definitely the way the series has gone. The last two games have been decided by 4 points. The first game was decided by 6 points. I mean, every game has been, you know, it's kind of a shame that I haven't watched much of this series either. It's probably been one of the better series. This one and the San Antonio series have definitely been the best two series.
I'd say it's one of the best, one of the most harder fought series. I don't know if I say it's the best. It's because the two teams are both struggling together. So it looks really good because the score is really close. However, I don't think the play, we've seen pretty sloppy play at times by both teams. And it really does keep the score kind of low and force it into close game situations at the end of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
But you know what? I mean, really, do you feel confident in either one of those two teams going against the Cavaliers in the next round?
Nah, neither one. I mean, the Heat are too old. And Toronto's just playing like they've never been there before. You know, they've struggled in the first two rounds.
You know, this could be Toronto's. There could be a big shakeup this offseason. DeMar DeRozan has been said to probably be going back home to Los Angeles to play with the Lakers. So this could be, you know, maybe one of the last shots for Toronto here with this lineup that they have right now.
Yeah, possibly. I'm sure they'll keep Lowry around as long as they can, but yeah, DeRozan, you know, it's going to be hard to keep both of them. And yeah, this may be make it or break it for them. But like you said, I don't see either one of them giving the Cavs in much trouble.
Me neither.
Maybe I think Cleveland will definitely cruise to the finals.
Now, I don't know. Go ahead.
When they get to the finals, you know, it's going to be a different story, you know, whoever they face out of the West. But I don't think they're going to cruise over either one of these two teams. I'd be surprised if it's more than a game series.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see Cavaliers to, you know, maintain this hot shooting that they are. But at the same time, all you have to really do, I mean, yeah, J.R. Smith has been pretty impressive, actually, hitting his threes with a hand in his face. He misses more shots when he's wide open than when he's covered. But for everybody else, you get up in their face, you play a little defense on them, and you rotate. That's the big thing, is rotating off of screens and not getting lost on the pick and roll. That's really what's killing a lot of these teams against the Cavaliers in the three-point shooting. So I think we'll see. Whoever they get, I think they'll actually move on. You know, maybe probably even sweep the next series too. But once they get to the finals, it's a different story, because the Warriors or the Thunder or even the Spurs, I think, are a lot tougher matchups than what they've seen so far in the postseason.
Yeah, I agree. Does Justice Winslow, is he hurt or is he just not playing here?
He don't really get a ton of playing time with Josh Richardson and all those other guys. And they've been playing a lot of Goran Dragic. You know, he had that one really big game. After that, he's been kind of cold. But Winslow really hasn't got much playing time. That's one thing that I liked them in the Charlotte series. They played the two rookies a lot, Richardson and Winslow, together, and it worked out pretty good.
Right. That's interesting. I just noticed he didn't play in the last game.
I don't know what Spo's doing down there.
I don't know.
We the North Raptors up 2-1 in the series. We'll see if they can step it up to 3-1. I think it's tonight.
I think you're going to be right.
Yeah, tonight. I can see if they go up another game and maybe take firm control over this game. The Heat will probably win.
Must win for Miami. They played good this whole series. Yeah, I think Miami will even it up.
I think so too. They're at home. Even though they don't have Whiteside, I like the Heat probably to even up the series here.
Yeah.
So, Clay, we've had some really big news in the last 2 weeks here when it comes to NBA coaches. And one thing that's interesting, I'll go back to the very beginning, which was the Los Angeles Lakers finally have their man. After firing Byron Scott, they go out, they get permission from the Golden State Warriors to speak to Luke Walton, the head assistant there. And now Luke Walton is the new head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, starting after the playoffs. I'll see how far the Golden State Warriors go. We figure them going to the finals, of course. But right. Luke Walton will officially be the new head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers.
Well, you know, he played for the Lakers for a long time. You know, his dad, obviously, Bill Walton, you know, he knows a lot about basketball. He's did a great job with Golden State this year. You know, when he was in charge, when Steve Kerr was out. So, you know, I think it's a pretty good hire. You know, I don't, you know, a lot of people, you know, think that Luke Walton, you know, might not should have took the job. But, you know, I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with it from either side. You know, I think he's comfortable in Los Angeles. I think they're going to, you know, make some moves in the offseason. I think they're going to be a better team. I like it from all points. I really do.
When he was the interim head coach, when Steve Kerr was out with that back surgery, Luke Walton went 39-4 as head coach of the interim head coach of the Warriors. And we really got to see a little bit of what, you know, what he really had. Because at this point, we were kind of impressed that he even was the lead assistant. And we haven't really got to see much of him as a coach until that point. Really started getting his name out there now. Overwhelmingly one of the top three coaches to be available this offseason. So he goes out to Los Angeles Lakers. What's interesting here is, yeah, it's a great move by the Lakers, but the dominoes may fall here because who is Luke Walton going to take with him? He's a young guy. He's not going to be taking a lot of these people that he knows in the league. He's going to be taking some of those assistants with him from Golden State.
Yeah. I'm not sure about that. Yeah, he might take some young coach. He coached a little bit in the D-League. I remember when he first retired, so he might have maybe take a D-League assistant. They'll work something out. Question is, you know, does an old coach, Phil Jackson, come back and join him?
That's the thing, is if Phil Jackson, who, by the way, is on vacation right now, well, the Knicks still don't have a coach. If he were to, next season, not he'd be re-signed and move over and sign with his fiance, Jeannie Buss, in Los Angeles, they would definitely keep Luke Walton. But how much impact would Phil Jackson have on Luke's coaching? I think that would actually, I think Luke wouldn't really agree to that. Even though, of course, it is Phil Jackson. It's just a coach having your own style like that and then being told and, you know, micromanaged. That can't be comfortable. We've seen many other coaches not get along with front office coaches because of front office management because they wanted to kind of co-manage what they did on the floor, and that lead to coaches resigning or being fired because of those situations.
Yeah, good point.
So it's interesting to think about, you know, Phil comes back to Los Angeles. To me, Phil, I mean, the only bad thing, if he doesn't come to Los Angeles, he would definitely retire for good, but it'd leave a bad taste in your mouth of who you thought Phil Jackson was. When you look back on his career,
yeah,
the last thing you're going to think about is him running the Knicks even further into the ground.
Yeah, that's true.
So that may be one thing that might, you know, propel him back into the front office somewhere and back to L.A. where he lives with his fiance, is to give one go without Kobe or Shaq.
Definitely, you know, it's always been the knock on Phil is that he always had Kobe and Shaq, and before that he had MJ and Pippen, and, you know, he's always had a great gas, you know. That's always been the big knock on Phil Jackson, but what if he stepped down and took an assistant role to the Lakers? That'd be kind of weird, though, coming back to the bench, you know.
Yeah, I don't think he's coming to the bench.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, it'd be interesting to think about Luke Walton and his assistant coach would be Phil Jackson.
That would be weird, yeah.
That would be kind of strange. But you know what? We'll see what happens. I think we're all kind of happy for Luke. He'll have his first head coaching job. It is, you know, one of the most prestigious franchises in NBA history with the Lakers going back home there. So maybe he'll be able to bring them back up because, you know, with every sport, you know, with – the sport's better when the Cowboys are good, when the Yankees are good, when the Lakers are good, and the Celtics are good. It seems like every sport has their teams that, you know, make the sport even more entertaining when that franchise is good.
Yeah, I agree.
I want to say the Knicks are good, too. I haven't really got a chance to see the Knicks good in my whole life, so I want them to be some kind of relevant in the league.
Yeah, true.
So some more head coaches, Clay, the Indiana Pacers fire Frank Vogel, which is, to me, one of the biggest mistakes in recent history, really, in the NBA when it comes to head coaches. He was fired by basketball operations president Larry Bird, who said at the news conference, "I decided that it's time for a new voice around here." And what's really interesting is Larry Bird didn't care what he said at the press conference. He was talking about, he didn't even talk in person to Frank Vogel before firing him. He said he talked to him on the phone for 30 minutes, and Frank was basically pleading and begging for him not to fire him. And he said that in the news conference.
Wow.
I mean, how awful is that? How cold-blooded is Larry Bird?
That's pretty bad. It's not even be ashamed of just to say how it was.
Yeah, I mean, just to be blatantly honest with you and tell you, how, you know what, you know how it is, just like, I mean, that.
The guy, all he's done is won. You know, he's been in the playoffs every year except for 1 year. You know, last year. You know, they finished.
Paul George is out.
When Paul George was out, they came back this year. It was 8 games, you know, above 500. They nearly, you know, beat Toronto in the first round of the playoffs. I think he's a good young coach. I think it's a mistake. I don't know. I wonder if Larry will head back to the sidelines, but I doubt it.
I doubt it. 6 years as head coach, Frank Vogel, 5 years in the playoffs, 2 years going to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a really good coach. I thought, you know, when rumblings about this were coming out, you're like, nah, they're not gonna fire him. He's like the core piece. They'll let go of other people. And then the longer we went without them re-signing him at the end of his deal, it became more apparent that they were going to try to move on. But if you're any other head coach out there who's looking for a gig, after seeing what Larry Bird did, just throwing his coach under the bus, why would you take this job?
They might have to get a Mike Woodson or somebody, something like that. I mean, you know what I mean? It's going to be, who's still even out there? You know,
well, if you're the Houston Rockets, everybody's still out there. Basically, if you're a person, the Houston Rockets are going to interview you for their head coaching job.
All right, I'll let the interim retain his title. I thought he did a pretty decent job.
Who's that?
I can't think of his name.
Oh, J.B. Bickerstaff?
Yeah.
Yeah, he actually pulled his name out of consideration for the job. Basically saying, I'm going to break up with you before you break up with me.
Wow.
that's the guy who's going to lead a head assistant job on another team, you know, possibly joining Luke Walton in Los Angeles, which would be a great duo there. That's the guy you pull for to get a better gig. I wouldn't wish the Rockets job on anybody, because you look and it's, you know, you think of the Houston Rockets and that and the history of that franchise. You look at the roster, James Harden, you know, even Dwight Howard there. You got all these pieces. And then you begin to look even deeper into the roster and you see J.R. Smith, you know, Beasley, all these guys, not J.R. Smith, but Josh Smith, Beasley, all these guys.
Yeah.
And I mean, come on. It's just so bad that the players on the team, it's their attitude and their mindset that's really making this job look unattractive for anybody who wants to be a head coach.
Yeah, I agree. It is. Again, Mike Woodson's probably going to get a job somewhere.
I mean, look at it this way. The Houston Rockets somehow made it to the Western Conference Finals last year.
Right.
And were almost beat the Warriors in that series. Okay, they come back into this season, 6 games into the regular season. The team meets together, and they agree to fire their coach, Kevin McHale, who got them to the Western Conference Finals last year.
Right.
That's what you're going to have to deal with, is that locker room and those players who are going to try to push you out if they go on a losing streak.
Right.
It's up to Daryl Morey in the front office there. Maybe they bring back Sam Hinkie in Houston as a front office guy. But it's going to be a head coach that understands what his role is going to be. It's going to be a guy like J.B. Bickerstaff who's going to play secondary to the team, of course, but take the fall every single game that they don't win.
Yeah. It ain't going to be an easy job. But none of the jobs, I mean, none of these jobs are easy. You know, you can get fired, you know, at any time in the professionals. But it's going to be, I don't know, it's going to be an even harder job, in my opinion. Indiana, Houston, good luck.
Right.
You got rid of two good, be careful what you wish for, you know what I mean?
So another job that came open over the weekend was the Memphis Grizzlies job after they decided to fire Dave Yeager after 3 successful seasons, by the way,
right,
as head coach of that team.
I don't like it.
Apparently, there was more to the story. When I first heard it, I was like, you got to be kidding me. This is a guy who, you know, he made art out of pieces of mud, which was the team, because how do you go the last 25, 30 games of the season with your lineup being Matt Barnes, Lance Stephenson, you know, all these terrible attitude guys? How do you pull them together, still make the playoffs, and actually play pretty tough in 2 of the 4 games in the series against the Spurs? That's all on the coach there.
Yeah.
But apparently there was more to the story. As it became clear that Yeager wanted a more lucrative contract and a fresh start elsewhere, Grizzlies management cut ties with him over the weekend, And the Memphis Grizzlies are starting their search immediately, and the former Indiana Pacers coach Frank Vogel is expected to get consideration and be pulled in for an interview as well. So this was the guy, Jaeger. He was the guy who had requested permission from the front office of the Grizzlies to be interviewed for other head coaching jobs while signed on to the Grizzlies. He was interested in the Kings job last year when they signed George Karl and some other jobs that came up, and he wanted to be able to at least talk to those teams and get pulled in for an interview. Of course, the front office didn't like that, and they had enough. They let him go after three seasons. His record there was 147-99. Pretty impressive for the Grizzlies, especially this year, how injury-bitten they were all year long. However, Jaeger was not out of a job for very long. He signed today with the Sacramento Kings to be their new head coach on a one-year coach option to make it 4 years worth $16 million.
Wow. Not a bad deal, I don't think.
So basically, Jaeger got what he wanted because he wanted another job somewhere else. And
not a bad deal. I wish he was in a better place.
Exactly. I don't know why he wanted this job to begin with. So now Sacramento has they have a good coach. Okay, that's one thing that's working for him. But just like Houston, they have a terrible locker room full of players who have their own crazy mindsets and attitudes that carries itself onto the floor and causes them games all season long.
It's going to be, I don't know. Good luck with, you know what? Kudos to Sacramento. They actually got a good coach.
They did. I don't know why anyone would want to go there, but he wanted to go to Sacramento. Maybe it's the weather. I don't know. And so now he's in Sacramento. He gets more money to be the head coach there. Let's see if he actually makes it 3 to 4 years, because they could let him go after two. Depends on what him and DeMarcus Cousins, if they get along wise there.
It'll be interesting. I don't know.
It's crazy.
It is. Good luck to him. I think he's a good guy. I think he's a good coach. I hope this doesn't, if he doesn't do well in Sacramento, maybe he'll get another chance somewhere else,
That's the thing, is looking more deeper into all these rosters and front offices, it's apparent who the good coaches are. And you really feel bad for Vogel and Jaeger, who to me were like two similar coaches who were really good and really overachieved at their job with the rosters they were given the last few years. And now, for at one point, they're both out of a job. Now, Jaeger has, when you think Vogel would soon get a job, he's a ton of options still out there with the Grizzlies, of course, being open now, which I think that'll actually be a good combination there. You wouldn't think he'd go to Houston, but I'm sure he'll be interviewed as, soon will Bugs Bunny and SpongeBob SquarePants will be interviewed by Houston as well, as they're just pulling in everybody they can to be interviewed for the job. I think Kenny the Jet Smith is interviewed today or tomorrow, Mark Jackson, I'm surprised he hasn't signed with somebody yet as a head coach. He's been interviewed by almost everybody.
I think he's a good fit in Houston.
I think so, too. I think he can relate to the players a little bit more.
Yeah, that's probably
who
they got their
set on. Well,
I don't know what they're thinking.
It seems like, to me, the more, the further along we get in the coaching search, the less you hear Jeff Van Gundy's name, so maybe he's starting to fall off the wagon a little bit with the head coaching train.
Yeah, understandable. He's a pretty good analyst. I think he's got a pretty good gig. He sees all his coaches getting fired for crazy reasons. I think he likes it where he is.
I think so too. So Clay, last week, or actually, yeah, I guess was it last week or the week before? It was the week before, right? We had the NFL draft, so we had your mock draft, and then a few days later, the official draft began. And we saw a few surprises, some crazy things happen in the mid-first round that led to one guy potentially being the number one overall pick, slide all the way down to 13 to Miami.
You're right, yeah. Talking, of course, about Larry Dunsell with the gas mask situation. Not really sure how that got leaked. Now, he claims he was hacked. Surely he wasn't stupid enough to post that, on his own. I think Miami got a really good player at number 13. I think Miami had a pretty good draft, by the way. But yeah, some interesting picks. You know, I didn't do too great on my mock, but had a few picks right. You know, I did. The run on receivers there in the early 20s. A couple of picks that I really, you know, the Packers drafting Kenny Clark in the first round, that was a big reach. Josh Garnett from San Francisco. You know, that's a guy I never even really heard of. Yeah, I think he was like a third-round prospect, taking him in the first round. So, you know, I did nail the Robert Kendiche to Arizona pick.
Yeah, sure did. Right on it.
So, I get a few picks, missed a few picks. You know, that's just how it goes.
Was there any big surprises you think in the first round? Because just to give everybody a rundown here, just the first couple of picks, of course, Jared Goff goes to Los Angeles, and then Carson Wentz goes to Philadelphia. By the way, Sam Bradford reported to camp today, so I guess that lockout's over, or the holdout's over. Joey Bosa signs with San Diego. And how about the Cowboys jumping up and getting a running back at the fourth overall pick, Ezekiel Elliott?
I guess Jerry had his way on that one. But, you know, they're a good team. I mean, they were a much different team when Romo was healthy. So, you know, add one of the best players in the draft. You know, why not? They did draft my boy Dak Prescott in the fourth round, so maybe he could be the fifth.
He looked good in the Cowboys uniform.
I like the Cowboys draft. A lot of people are giving them kind of a hard time. But, I think they went with the best player available, you know, with a lot of their picks, and I don't have a problem with their picks. I think they're probably the team to beat in the NFC East if Romo can stay healthy. If not, Washington's going to be right there with them. I think Washington had a pretty good draft, but yeah, it's going to be a pretty competitive division, especially with those two teams. I don't think it's going to be the best division in football. You know, maybe one of the worst, but I thought Washington had a pretty good draft getting Josh Docks in there in the first round. They obviously improved in the offseason. So that's going to be interesting to watch that division between Dallas and Washington. I think both of them had good offseasons.
You know who really impressed me is a team that's on the rise, and that's the Jacksonville Jaguars. Getting Jalen Ramsey in the first and then getting Miles Jack in the second, or was it third? I think it was the second round. Then get Miles Jack.
Yeah. I'd probably give Jacksonville I think they probably did the best job of any team. They were Tennessee. Really, really had good draft, I think.
Yeah, if you're Tennessee, I mean, you did a great job of getting what you needed in the first round. After trading back, you get your guy out of Michigan State, Jack Conklin. That's a great pick there, one of the best O-linemen in the draft. And then you go out, and was it the third round or was it late second, you go out and get Derrick Henry?
Yeah, I've got Henry in the second. Let me scroll down here. I got him. They traded back up, got Jack Conklin, big tackle from Michigan State. They got Kevin Dodd at the beginning of the second round, which I thought was a good pick. You know, the defense.
Oh, Clemson. Play. Yeah.
I wasn't too sure about their next big nose tackle, Austin Johnson, out of I think he played at Penn State. I thought that was a reach. You know, they could have had Ashawn Robinson. They could have had Jaren Reed. So I was a bit of a head scratcher. Then getting Derrick Henry was kind of a head scratcher. You know, because they just signed
DeMarco Murray,
or just traded for DeMarco Murray, but I think that'll be a potentially really potent 1-2 punch, to kind of help Mariota, ease home. They got a good safety out of Middle Tennessee, Kevin Bard in the third round. Got a guy that I really like out of Arkansas, Sebastian Tratola. Remember the big lineman from Arkansas who threw that pass on?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they got him in the sixth round, which I thought was a really good pick. So overall, I think Tennessee had a really good draft. I'd give them an A.
That's crazy. That's crazy thinking about how the Tennessee Titans now have the last two Heisman Trophy winners in their backfield.
Yeah, the future definitely looks good for Tennessee. I'd give them a good grade. I like what Miami did. You know, Kenyon Drake in the third round could potentially be a really good pick if he can stay healthy. Laramie Tunsil, obviously, there in the first round. You know, those are some good. They made some really good picks. The Cowboys that I mentioned, the Cowboys did draft Jalen Smith in the second round, which, that's a guy who's not going to be able to play this year, potentially. But, he has potential to be an all-pro type player in a few years. And to get that kind of player in the second round is really good. But yeah, you mentioned Jacksonville a minute ago. I would give them the best grade overall. Jalen Ramsey, Miles Jack, Sheldon Day in the fourth round, Brandon Allen in the sixth round, quarterback out of Arkansas, who I really like as well. You're familiar with him. So I think Jacksonville had a really good draft, and Houston as well. The Texans had a good draft I think they reached a little bit on Will Fuller, but they got Nick Martin in the second round. They got Braxton Miller in the third round. I think they had a pretty good draft. And I'd give Jacksonville, Washington, Tennessee, Dallas, and then Houston. That's probably my top five team grades. And then a team like Miami, not too far behind as well. So I'd give all those teams probably an A grade, honestly. Maybe some of them an A. I'd give Jacksonville for sure an A+. Maybe Washington an A+. Tennessee probably an A+. And I'd probably give the other teams, an A- or something. But I think all those teams had really good drafts.
I like it. We had heard for weeks rumors on who the Broncos are going to get at quarterback. Trade for Colin Kaepernick, trade for possibly Robert Griffin III before he went to Cleveland. All these other crazy rumors are going around. And then they actually trade up into the draft after trading with Seattle. They trade to the 26th overall pick and select Paxton Lynch out of Memphis.
That's who I figured they would get. I thought they could just sit where they're at and get him. I really don't know who they had to jump. I guess San Francisco sitting there at 28. They had to jump San Francisco, and they did that. So that makes sense.
What do you think of the move?
I think it was a good move. I think they had to do something.
I think so.
I hope they like Mark Sanchez. Okay. I think Mark Sanchez will be the quarterback this year. I guess they're just going to hope that their defense is as good as it was last year. But, I don't think it's going to be. They lost some pieces off that defense, some big pieces off that defense. So, I don't know. I think Denver's going to definitely have a rebuilding year. But at least they got the quarterback for the future.
That's true. I think they're going to be able to it's interesting. You look at the Eagles with Wentz and Sam Bradford. You look at Denver with Mark Sanchez, who attended the draft party thrown by the Denver Broncos, and then go out and trade up to draft a quarterback in the first round, who's possibly going to be the starter, or at some point will be the starter for the Broncos. So it was a crazy turn of events for some of these teams that were drafting and needing quarterbacks this year.
Yeah. I think next year is going to be a really good year for the quarterbacks. You got, Deshaun Watson coming out, a couple other guys. I think some teams are really waiting on next year. I think Cleveland, is probably waiting on to get in on the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes. But, yeah, this year's quarterback class is Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, what do you think about the Eagles trading up and getting Carson Wentz, and then the rest of their draft was just kind of They didn't have that many picks, because they didn't have a second round pick, they didn't have a fourth round pick. They did draft Jalen Mills in the seventh round, which I thought was a really good pick. It might have been their best pick in the whole draft, but drafted him in the seventh round. So, I don't know. I don't know where Philadelphia is going to go. It's going to be interesting.
So, Clay, may I ask you a couple questions here? Who wins game four tonight, Toronto or Miami?
I'm going to go with Miami in a must-win situation.
I think so, too. They're at home. Dwayne Wade's going to have a good game. I think Joe Johnson, we'll see him step up this game. We'll need him with some hot shooting because of Whiteside being out. And then finally,
Joe missed a big shot at the end of game three. I think he can redeem himself.
I think so, too. And then later tonight, Stephen Curry's been upgraded to questionable. I still think he'll at least play. If he does play, it'll be a limited role. He'll come off the bench, play just a few minutes to get back in rhythm. I personally think they should sit him till they go back home for game five. But we'll see what Steve Kerr does. They play tonight at Portland at 10:30. Who wins tonight's game four, Clay?
Late game, of course. It's going to be a late game. At Portland, no Steph Curry. Give me the Trailblazers.
Wow, going to tie the series up at two apiece?
I think so.
Wow.
It's going to be interesting.
I think Golden State gets it done. They find a way to, because I mean, that's the one weakness that we've seen. I mean, Portland was actually the first team to beat them more than once this year. The biggest weakness that the Warriors have, which there's not many, but they have a hard time against teams that have the point guard who can score and shoot three and get to the paint and just do it all. And that's what Lillard's done this year, and that's what Irving will do in the finals if they get there. They have to find a way to stop him and change the way that they're going to do, but they have to get out of this round first. I do think they get the game tonight, making it 3-1, going back to Golden State. Curry will play in that one, and they'll pull it out 4-1. 4-1.
I can see it.
And finally, Clay, the biggest question we're all kind of wondering here, what's on tap for tomorrow's big birthday bash?
I'm not sure. I think me and Amy may go to Chattanooga, hang out, go to grab a pool and eat a world of beer, get something to eat, maybe go to Rock City or go on a hike or something, you know. I kind of want to go on a ghost tour, but I don't think there's going to be any ghost tours on a Tuesday, so we'll figure that out.
That's the only thing about your birthday this year is that it falls on Tuesday, not a lot of action's taking place.
Luckily, I'm off every other Tuesday in my new job, so.
Oh, wow. That works out pretty great.
It did work out pretty great, yeah. So I'm lucky to be off on my birthday.
Well, man,
you ever been on one of those ghost tours in Chattanooga? I want to go for some reason.
I've never been on a ghost tour. Probably because I'm a big scaredy cat who really, whenever I'm home alone, I can hear noises and sounds I create with my own mind, and that throws me off. So I have to have the TV really loud. I don't need any extra fears going to ghost tour. I don't need the search for any more fears.
Actually, sometimes I get caught up watching those ghost shows. You know, they try and, you know, I think they're pretty much fake for the most part. But it would be interesting to go on one.
I mean, the only kind of ghost shows that I watch are Scooby-Doo. So that kind of tells you a little bit about me right there.
Well, those are the best.
All right, guys, we will see you all next week for a brand new Sports Report podcast with Brad and Clay. We'll get deeper into the NBA playoffs. We'll know some winners and some losers by next week, actually. And we'll have maybe some more news on the head coach's front as well. Clay, thanks as always for stopping by and being part of the show. Hope you have a tremendous birthday tomorrow, whatever you decide to go do. Maybe if you go hang out with the ghost, make it your own. We'll see you guys all next week for the Sports Report Podcast.